from Sportsnet. John Shannon joins us again. John, how are you?
Hey, Jason, how are you? By the way, are there words to Brass Bonanza that you can do in karaoke?
If there was, it would be awesome, and I would crush
it. Does everybody know why you play Brass Bonanza?
Oh, yeah, everybody knows I'm a Whaler fan. Okay. They love it.
Just curious.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, we talk about it on a regular basis. We only play it on Fridays because it's such a positive, upbeat song.
Don't tell Brian Burke that.
Yeah, I know. We had Burkey on. That was brutal. Like, clearly he has no musical taste, right? Like, his musical taste is almost as bad as his haircut taste. We like to bug him about that, too.
We're not going there.
John, Daniel Carcillo, like, really, suspensions when guys get 2 games or 3 games, people will debate over. But he had no reason to do what he did to Scott Driscoll, like, well-deserving of 10 games in my mind.
Well, I mean, let's face it. This is one of those things that going into any of this post-game discussion, there are 3 options. 3 games, 10 games, or 20 games. And the arguments that would be put forth would be, well, Carcillo wasn't really an issue because it wasn't the fight. Why was Scott Driscoll pushing him towards the penalty box so viciously? The bottom line is that Carcillo may not be considered a repeat offender. He's been in the pain in the butt of the NHL and its officials for a long, long time. And they wanted to get him in the box so that he didn't become a distraction. So in the end, it was pretty straightforward. I don't think anybody was willing at this point to waive it and just give him the 3 games. So it became 10 or 20, and 10 was enough, because when you consider that that'll be the rest of this series and the next if they get there.
Stepan, you think he's done for the playoffs?
Well, I don't know how a guy plays with a broken jaw after right away, other than you know that they're so excited and they got the adrenaline flow going. It's obviously, I'm not trying to downplay it, but it's certainly not it's a fracture, so that means there's a crack somewhere, but it's not a completely broken jaw. I saw him do interviews after the game. So you have to wonder. I expect that it wouldn't surprise me that he misses Sunday's game and is back in the lineup when they get back to Montreal.
Really?
Huh. I wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, some people were wondering if they're just doing this to get Prestar a long suspension. Like, the hit was late. I think we can all agree with that, John. I don't really think that the head was the initial point of contact. So, like, what do you think he gets? 1 game, 2 games at the most?
I've said on every radio interview I've done today is 2 games.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I don't believe the principal point of contact was the head, but it did go through similar, almost in many ways, like Lars Eller, how he was hit by Greiba last year. And so I fully expect that Greiba got 2 games.
Yeah, fair enough. John, looking at the LA Kings and the Chicago Blackhawks, everybody thought game 2 for 38 minutes was all Chicago, which it was. And then a lucky goal off a skate, it changed momentum. And now all of a sudden everyone's like, hey, we got a real series here. You know, the LA Kings have found ways to always get back in series. They've lost 3 straight twice in this playoffs and came back and won both series. This is a team 3rd year in a row in the Western Conference Championship. They got the biggest group of forwards, the biggest group of defensemen in the West. Who do you like in that series and why?
You know what? Playoff series, and I'm not taking a shot at Edmonton, but you know darn well that, you know, if you watch a lot of playoffs and are involved in them, we haven't seen many in Edmonton recently, but that there's such a game of adjustments. There's such a game of ebbs and flows. If LA had scored 3-1 or 6-1, by the time it was 3-2, it didn't make a difference. You could just sense it. I would tell you, I still think Chicago will win. I don't think you can get away from the Blackhawks' depth. I think that in many ways, what Daryl Sutter's been trying to do, he's been trying to get Kopitar working. Jeff Carter, we know, is going to do this every once in a while and get, you know, Carter's a pretty streaky guy. And you know, these teams are so close, but I can't not pick the Blackhawks. I think Chicago, with their defense, with Keith and Seabrook and what they have up front and Marian Hossa, I just think the Blackhawks, it may be longer than I thought. And a lot of people were saying, oh, it's 5 games again, like last year. It may be longer, but I can't see the Blackhawks losing.
Compliance buyout period starts June 15th, John.
I've forgotten about that. Holy smokes.
Yeah, and I was looking it up. Of course, you know, there are 4 teams that already use 2 of theirs, Toronto, Montreal, Philly. And who's the other one off the top of my head? I'm forgetting it. Chicago. So those teams don't have any left. But there's still about 42.
Well, Rangers have used both theirs, haven't they? I guess
no,
not.
They only used Wade Redden. So they do have one. Now, there's some obvious ones. You know, Marty Havlat, we all know, is already out. Ville Leino in Buffalo seems like a no-brainer. Same with Ryan Malone because his cap hits $4.5 million, but he's only – earned $2.5 million, so they don't have to buy him out of the money left owing to him. So that cost.
I'm not sure they'll be allowed to until he gets out of this. Until he gets out of the substance abuse program, I think he's in limbo.
Really? Okay. You know, well,
that has to be. You know, that becomes a priority for any player once they're in the substance abuse program. Now there may be something negotiated at a later date, but until he gets a full clearance and comes out of the program, I don't think they can touch him.
Any idea how long that program lasts? Like, when does he go in it?
Well, he was in it. He was automatically put in it the moment he was arrested.
Okay. So.
And what he has to do, and it has nothing to do with the Players Association or the league. It's an independent group that monitors him. And it will be up to them whether they will deem that he is worthy to re-enter the NHL.
Okay. Now, some other ones. Eric Cole in Dallas, owed $4 million, but his cap hit's higher than that, so there's a break there. Guys like him and Volchenkov, David Booth, Ed Jovanovski, do you think those are guys who get bought out?
Well, I mean, the great thing is that there's no loyalty to David Booth with the administration in Vancouver now. I could see Booth being bought out easily, yes. Eric Cole's an interesting one. We had Jim Neal on the show from the Memorial Cup, Jason, and he talked a great deal about how he expects this summer to be as busy and busier than anything else that he's seen in a long, long time, and player movements, simply because the long-term contracts aren't working. So I think any team that has an opportunity to lower their cap challenges will do it. So I think Cole will probably be bought out, yes.
When you look at, Eric Duhatchik threw it out there about Mike Richards, and I look at his numbers and I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure. Brad Richards has $8 million guaranteed in bonuses that he gets on top of the buyout. So I don't see any, like, Vinny LeCavalier buyouts. Do you?
I don't yet. I think Brad Richards is the one that you have to wonder about still. Even though he has been reinvigorated under Alain Vigneault and certainly been reinvigorated in these playoffs. But again, I think the more managers that start thinking about how they're going to shape their teams and deliver shorter contracts, to me, then you have to say you have to make yourself more nimble under the cap. And Glenn Sather is not, he doesn't necessarily have to be loyal to anybody, particularly with the run they've had this year. So the Richards one to me is something that I think is still on the table. And I mean, Glenn can sit there and poo-poo it and say, no, I'm not going to do it. But I'm sure that they've given it a long consideration. Mike Richards to me, he's not near as old as he maybe he's playing right now. I think that that's probably just an adjustment of how many games he's played the last few years. I wouldn't be buying Mike Richards out, particularly the way, listen, I you got to love the chemistry in Los Angeles right now and what they deliver, and they're still a young team with a couple of those veterans. I wouldn't be talking about buying Mike Richards out.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one. Florida Panthers. Ownership has already come out and stated that they'd be willing to spend a little bit more money. They've only got one player under contract past next season. Do you think the Florida Panthers are going to be a big player in free agency?
I do, and there's some pretty obvious ones. I think David Bolin is probably leaning towards going to Florida as opposed to staying in Toronto, simply because Toronto is not going to be able to deliver the dollars that anybody else can. We've heard rumblings of Bolin to Florida already. Let's try to figure out who their coach is and what type of hockey they're going to play, and I think that's one of the questions that comes into play. Because that will decide in many ways what kind of free agents you're going to get there. So Dale has to figure out what kind of coach he's got, who he has coaching, before they end up figuring out how many free agents they're going to sign.
John Shannon from Sportsnet joined us. Dave Boland, Do you think Dale Talon, who knows him quite well, of course, from the time in Chicago, would actually pay him $5 million?
Yes.
Wow. For a third-line center.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. I am far from a Giant Leaf supporter, even though I live in Toronto. But Dave Bolin changed the complexion of the Maple Leafs, and at most of the time in that, when he was changing the complexion of the team, he was the number two guy there. And when you look at the young people that they have in Florida, David Bolin would be a perfect guy to put in that mix with Huberdeau, with Barkov. And I mean, that's the type. There's a lot of teams looking for veterans that can lead, and can create dimension for your club. And when you talk about how young Florida is and how many dollars they need to prepare for the future, a guy like Bolin could fit in there very nicely.
I look at Florida, and what do you think they're going to do with the number one pick?
Trade it. I mean, that's the word around London here. That's kind of the word, is that there's so much need for them to get a couple of guys, maybe trade down a couple of spots, three spots, and get a body that can play now and be a contributor. This is not the 2015 draft. This is not a draft with a lot of depth. There are five or six players. Everybody in Edmonton's heard the same names that have been given out. For that very reason, this is the draft to be starting to bargain with. And if they can get somebody that can help the team now, there's still an argument of whether anybody who's picked this year, whether it's Reinhart, whether it's Bennett, whether it's Michael Del Cole or even Aaron Ekblad, if they can help next year. The Florida Panthers need help right now, and that's why they would do it.
John, I know you're at the Memorial Cup. A lot of people there, lots of rumors floating around. What are you hearing coaching in Washington and Vancouver?
Well, I keep getting told that Barry Trotz is being wined and dined by the Capitals. He was in there last, Tuesday. I've lost track of days being here. Tuesday or Wednesday, he was there for the full day with Dick Patrick at Ted Leonsis. They don't have a general manager yet. They're talking to Barry on the basis of, once we get our manager, please be available. We can make this work. Obviously, Trotz, who summers in Vernon, B.C., will be on Jim Benning's list. At the same time, whoever Jim Benning's an interesting guy. I don't think that there's a read on who his type of coach is right now after spending those years in Buffalo and in Boston. And you've got to think that somebody that people in Edmonton are quite familiar with, Mike Johnson of the Portland Winterhawks, has to be on somebody's list as well.
What is your analysis of Barry Trotz as a head coach?
You know what? That's a really good question. I don't know what he can do with high octane players. I've never seen it, so how can I comment? I've seen him have two or three outstanding players, you know, when you think of Suter and Weber and Pekarina in goal, but their type of player on the offensive side was forced to play such a meticulous system, a defensive system, for them to even compete. It wasn't very exciting to watch. He obviously knows the game and knows how to play a defensive style. The question is, can he play an open style? The one thing I could tell you, Jason, about Barry Trotz, he loves to meet. Barry Trotz has meetings to have meetings, and you have to wonder how that goes in certain markets where players have not been held accountable at that level. So that's where you have to wonder about a team like Washington, if he fits in there, if certain players would adapt to the intense meeting schedule that Trotz would create.
Yeah, you know, meetings for the sake of meetings is never a good thing. And the reason I ask that question is because Nashville's done a great job of developing defensemen over the years. We've all seen it. But yep, their track record with forwards is awful. Like, it's awful. And so maybe they just always pick the wrong player, or did the system they play hamper forwards overall in your mind?
I think that's a great question, and I think that's key to all of this. I do know that there are some guys over the years that were offensive players that ended up going there as, whether being traded there or free agents, didn't last long very, simply because by the end of it, they were forced and asked to play so much of a defensive style, their offensive capabilities weren't properly used. So I think that's a real valid point about the whole whether he can coach an offensive style of game, and that's one that when you even look at a guy like Martin Erat, who was okay in Nashville, and despite the few weeks in Washington last year, Erat did okay in Phoenix. He was a lot, and even under a really defensive designed coach like Dave Tippett, and you have to wonder if Trotz's philosophy stifle any offensive capabilities.
John Shannon from Sportsnet joins us. John, quickly, give me your thoughts on Valdor Edmonton tonight.
Well, if you watch the Canadians play last night, we've seen Valdor play a similar game all three nights. They get off to poor starts. They start to gain some momentum in the second period, and at the end they're outplaying the opponent. And if they can hold on and Bebo can play goal long enough for them to be tied, they can probably win the game. They're well-conditioned. They're fast. I'm still waiting for the Oil Kings to play a full game here. Mm-hmm. I don't think that anybody who has not seen them a lot has come in and been overly impressed simply because their power play has not been very good. Griffin Reinhart has been inconsistent, to say the least. Curtis Lazar has had signs of brilliance, but we'd like to see a game of brilliance. If the Oil Kings to play the way they did in those middle three games of the series against Portland and in Game 7, I think there's little contest here, but we haven't seen that. And Valdor has this thing about them that they can keep gnawing at you, and by the end of the game, you look up at the scoreboard and they've won 3-2. So if the Oil Kings play Oil King hockey, they win. If they don't come close, they won't win.
John, always good to talk to you. Enjoy the Memorial Cup.
Thanks, Jason. Have a great day.